Well, welcome to Foreman and Wolf on WYPR. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, it's a funny thing. How many customers that come into restaurants, how many people that you speak to, what's the number one thing that they are afraid of cooking?
Fish.
Why do you think?
I understand, actually. I think it's intimidating from the very beginning. You know, where do you buy it? What do you look for when you buy it? You know, and then you have to get it in your house, you know, because that can be a process. Because you might have to, if it's the middle of summertime, you're going to have to cool it on the way home in a cooler. You know, it's a volatile product. And but when it's very fresh, and it's one of the best things you can eat. And frankly, I will say right now, my favorite way to eat excellent fish is raw. I love raw fish. I think it just really, the texture.
Raw one is beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, the texture, the way that it tastes, it's so pristine and perfect.
That's the thing. It's all the qualifiers, right? And so it's all the, like, if it's perfect, if it's pristine, if it's really fresh, but is it so fresh that it still is rigor mortis? Do you have to actually wait a couple of hours, you know? Because that happens, certainly with some fish more than others, but that definitely happens.
Yeah.
Like with the fluke, it's like, you know, 6-8 hours you have to.
Right. Well, the other fear and what you're getting at is how to cook it. You know, it's not only buying it, storing it in your refrigerator. I mean, do you really want to bring home a piece of fish and put it in your refrigerator with all your other stuff? And yes, you do if it's really fresh, because if it's really fresh, it should smell like the sea.
Well,
or the water it came from.
I had a friend who was like not that big on eating fish, and he'd always say, "Oh, but what if you don't like the way the sea smells?"
Well, that's I don't even.
Yeah,
know what to
exactly
say to that.
Right. I'm like, that's why don't you just
stupid.
Why don't you just say that you had a lot of fish that was maybe not very nice when you were a kid,
well, and it
hangs
I didn't.
Around.
When I was a kid, my sister and I were talking about this.
You're
my
that
sister
kid.
Was just visiting, and we grew up. I lived in North Carolina when I was a little girl, and I don't recall eating much seafood when I was little. But we were way off the coast, so. But then I lived in Indiana, in the Midwest. In the 70s, there wasn't any good fresh fish unless you got it from a lake.
It was a world full of fish sticks.
And that was awesome, of course. But it was, not in my family. There were no fish sticks in our agenda.
No, my mother, that's not her. That's
no,
not
my
her
mother
agenda.
Always made fresh food from scratch, period. And she wanted her family to eat in a healthy way. Always did. We always had a balanced meal, always had a very fresh vegetable, always had some sort of, in her mind, a starch and then a meat. You know, and we often had salad and things like that. But getting back to fish, I grew up on cod and scrod. And I mean, my sister and I were just talking about it, and she didn't even remember eating it. And I said, well, you know what? Maybe it is because my sister's 6 years older than me. So by the time I was in the seventh grade, she was gone into college. And I remember the cod and scrod. Maybe it was more available by that time. Maybe that's why she didn't remember it. But
maybe your mom just began the experiments with cod and scrod.
Oh God, it was horrible. I hated fish because it wasn't her fault and by any means because my mom is a good cook, but it was always baked in the oven with butter and maybe lemon. She always overcooked it. It was always cooked all the way through, which I think came from a fear of hers and not knowing. And as good of a cook as my mom, that's a perfect example of what happens with
someone
people.
That cares and can cook a number of things, but not that.
Yeah, she just didn't know how to deal with it and didn't grow up on it either. So, I mean, I guess if my mother was from the coast of Maine or the coast of South Carolina, maybe, you know, she would have grown up cooking differently rather than being someone from Pennsylvania that's landlocked as well. And you know, but also, you know, just things have changed so much over the last 30 years in food and what's available to us in our country. And I think that's a really big point. If you don't live in a coastal area, you are able to get really great fish because of all the
I didn't grow up in the Midwest. I grew up here in Maryland.
Right.
And my seafood experience was almost exclusively because of my dad. And my dad would want to stand and shuck oysters in the kitchen.
Which is awesome.
And, you know, and just eat a million oysters. And just raw little lemon or Tabasco or just, you know, or with a beer, period. You know, that's welcome to Maryland. Here you are.
Absolutely.
That's what you get, right?
Right.
Or steamed crabs in the backyard. That's great. But that's not fish.
No.
That's not fish. And then my first real fish experience was my mother was dating somebody and guy drops off a bluefish. And she bakes it in the oven covered in tartar sauce and breadcrumbs.
Oh, God. Oh, jeez.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm like, wait, oysters, raw oysters, love them. Crabs, also love them. Fish.
Oily fish covered with tartar sauce. Bluefish is very oily.
No, baked with the tartar sauce and breadcrumbs on it.
That's not okay.
Okay.
Well, you know, but that's part of how people used to, they just, just didn't.
This was actually a fresh product.
You're talking about the 1970s too, I bet.
Oh yeah. This is.
Because we were both born.
This is probably like
so.
July 5th or 6th, 1976. I think I can pinpoint it. Yeah.
And well, so
to go from
people have advanced since then. I mean,
well, no question, but it,
but,
the thing
but
that,
there's still a lot of concerns about how to cook fish.
And getting,
or fears.
And getting seafood and getting really fresh stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The time that struck me, 11, 12 years ago, in autumn. Going to Sicily and going to a little restaurant,
life-changing
on the coast,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's Pete Lavolsi and I. It's just the two of us, and we go and we walk past
the
this place.
Chef. Yeah.
And we walk past the place, and there's the dock is there, and a guy pulls up at the dock, and I'm trying to learn Italian, and this guy was speaking Sicilian dialect, and so I'm like an idiot, just walk up and start talking to the guy, and he's like, "Go talk to my brother,"
great.
You know, mm-hmm. who's he's going to open the restaurant in an hour.
Wow.
I said, it's 7 o'clock. He's, yeah, but he won't get any of these fish cleaned until he's just come in from the Mediterranean with fish for tonight's dinner. And people are sitting at the tables waiting.
That's awesome. That's,
you know,
so great.
They know what the point is.
Nothing better than that.
And okay, one brother fisherman, the other brother's going to cook it. You're going to have nice fish.
And perfect.
Pete and I were supposed to go to a much fancier place, and I'm like,
We're gonna
sit out here. We sat on the porch in front of the restaurant and had
nice.
You know, just one plate after the other, a little tiny calamaretti or a little grilled octopus and then one fish after another, just like either simply grilled or one was fried and really
say,
strong
was
olive
fried?
Oil with caper berries
oh,
and
stuff.
It was
so
just
great.
Amazing.
That's so
and
great.
Very simple, and it was just like a big bowl of fruit on the table and olives on the table and olive oil and chilies. And that's it.
Can we go there right now?
It was
oh my gosh!
Ridiculous.
And you could see the water from there.
We sat there and we looked at the guy's boat. The other brother was still cleaning
perfect.
His boat, drinking wine
cleaning
the whole
up,
time, but cleaning
wine,
his boat.
Cleaning
so it was going
boat,
slow.
Getting ready to go back out the next day. That's cool.
But it struck me that, like, we're in Maryland. We have all this coast.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't occur. It
I know.
Doesn't.
It's, that was one.
I
of,
mean, I don't think there's the fantasy of it occurring. I think in some places along the bay, but it's maybe guys dropping off crabs or something. But it's not. You know, the restaurant, the whole point is the actual fish, the beautiful fish coming
mm-hmm.
out of the bay
mm-hmm.
or the fish coming off of the ocean along the, you know, the beaches in Maryland. And I don't know why we don't like.
Why don't we have that here?
Yeah, why?
I don't know, because I wondered that when we moved here. I'm like, wait a minute. I came from Charleston. That was a coastal area. You had fishing boats coming in all the time into Charleston. It is a different body of water. But and we're on the ocean, obviously. But yeah, I expected there to be docks with fishermen on it,
yeah.
right outside of the restaurant.
That yeah, where the brother, you know, dropping
yeah.
stuff off, and the other guy, no. Well,
could we make that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd love to make that happen, but
ooh.
But anyway, because there is nothing better than the beautiful fresh stuff right away.
Absolutely. Well, and that's life-changing to have it like you did, or when I've been to northern Spain and being along the coast there. I mean, just
yeah.
realizing how beautiful fresh fish is and seafood and shellfish.
We got these three lobsters today. Which one do you want?
Right.
We're actually not cooking anything else because we got these three lobsters today.
There you go. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
You know, the all right, can we total non sequitur?
Yeah.
But let's go back to the fear factor with fish.
Mm-hmm.
So people are afraid of cooking it, but they're also afraid of dealing with it if it's really fresh. And I would like you to read a particularly
yeah,
violent
this
memoir
is, this
about
this is
fish.
Crazy. I have to read this. All right, so this is from La Russe and Gastronomique,
which is a great reference
book for cooking. It's about eel. To prepare yourself for this, because it's kind of crazy to read. But to kill an eel, seize it with a cloth and bang its head violently against a hard surface. To skin it, put a noose around the base of the head and hang it up. Slit the skin in a circle just beneath the noose. Pull away a small portion of the skin, turn it back, take hold of it with a cloth, and pull it down hard. Clean the eel by making a small incision in its belly. Cut off and discard the head and the end of the tail. Wash and wipe dry. Okay, that's one of the most violent passages I've ever seen about anything to do with food. I was horrified when I read it this morning.
It is also good direct advice.
It is. It's perfect. I mean, it's right. It's
yeah.
the way it's been done since the beginning of time because
yeah.
eel has been eaten forever. But, you know, that's actually...
Yeah, when I worked with Jean-Pierre at the Union League, he was, you know, this gigantic chef from Alsace. I was like, okay, this is the way... Bumped
mm-hmm.
is the sound of the eels hitting the table.
Yeah, well, that's because they come in live.
Yeah.
And that's how you have to deal with it. You have to...
And you better pick them right up from the ice while they're chilled down, because if they're warmed up,
they're going to be and all
like,
over the
and
place.
Like in a sink or swimming around or something?
Yeah, they're
you're
going to
get...
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
You better pay attention, yeah.
Yeah, that's very crazy to hear, but that's, you know... So there's
you want it fresh?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's we, you know, we've had the guys over the years who show up with the big cooler of rockfish, you know, that guy shows up with a big cooler of rockfish the first time, and Pete's like, well, what do we do? These are alive. I'm like, put one on the table. He's flipping around. You flip your French knife around. You just tap him, you know, tap him where his brain is. He's done.
Okay, right. So what you do if you get something
with the
live.
Part of
yeah,
the program.
Yeah. Then let's move into, you know, let's talk quickly about what you look for when you go to the market to buy. I think you almost have to start there. What were you going to say?
Let's pick a couple of basic fish or type of fish that people should expect to maybe see if they're going to buy whole fish. You know, what are the types of things that you see, and what are the general characteristics they look for?
Well, I think salmon is pretty around. So you know, you may see whole salmon, you may see. Well, you're definitely here going to see whole rockfish. That's the biggest thing you're going to see because it's indigenous to our seacoast. So, and all up and down the northeastern seacoast. So there's a lot of it. Thank goodness. Perch. You know, you're always looking for bright red gills, clear eyes. I think there's one variety of fish that actually never has clear eyes. I can't remember what it was, but it's everything else has clear eyes. So the eyes should be clear. The gills should be bright red. If you are able to touch the fish, which, you know, you can't do that everywhere, but if you're allowed to, you know, the flesh wants to bounce back very quickly. Obviously, it wants to smell good. In other words, it does want to smell fresh. It wants to smell like the sea, like some body of water. Yeah, it wants to, yes. And the scales should be clinging to the fish. If the scales are coming off easily, then they're not clinging to the fish. It's been dead for too long. So those are some of the basic things, you know, smell, touch, visuals, and that's what you're looking for.
The gills, not everyone knows where gills are on most fish.
Right,
below if you look behind the eyes and behind like the cheekbone that's sort of tucked in there, you can lift them up. It's like a little flap that has almost like a fan or something.
And
you'll see,
you'll
see the color there. And if there's a smell there, you definitely don't want the fish.
Oh, definitely not. Well, and the other thing, and you talk about that, right there in the cheek, the cheeks. I mean, I remember when I first started cooking in Charleston, South Carolina, we had one of our local seafood guys who was a fisherman who would bring us fresh fish. Used to bring us grouper cheeks for employee meal. Oh, my gosh. So good. They would just give them to us. And this was, you know, in the mid-'80s, early 80s. And now, of course, grouper cheeks are probably like, you know, $9 a pound. But there was a time.
All the cheeks have gone up in price. Cheeks,
yeah.
Cheeks
there was
have gotten
a time when cheeks
popular.
Used to be free. Yeah.
Yeah, veal cheeks, beef cheeks.
Well, it's like sweetbreads, but that's another topic, you know. But yeah, so that's what you're looking for. Obviously, you know, my suggestion is you get in with a butcher, a seafood butcher or a store or a local, you know, we do have, thankfully here in Baltimore, have plenty of local places that are sell just seafood. But that you develop a relationship with that person. And that's really the best situation is you start talking with them, you tell them what you're after, and you ask them what's fresh and great. And, you know, if you trust them, they're going to take care of you.
If you know Wednesday they're getting a great shipment of, you know, of 2-3 different kinds of things, then Wednesday you plan that to be your menu. I mean,
I think that's a little bit.
If you want to learn to cook fish at home properly, first thing you got to do is come up with great fish.
Yeah, and you need to be open-minded. What's available and is really fresh, that's what you should be buying, not what you went to the store with in your head necessarily.
Well, yeah, sometimes you read a recipe. I think the thing that happens sometimes, people read a recipe and they hear, oh, it's pompano. I have to get pompano.
Mm-hmm.
What is pompano? It's a relatively, you know, oily, warm water fish that has really good flavor and skin that crisps up well. You want another fish that's like that if it's better than that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love pompano.
Well, when we come back on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll talk about all the fish that Cindy loves.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I just had to throw that in there.
I love pompano, too. That's
I
why
do.
I mentioned
it. It's such
it.
A good fish.
And
a lot of people don't know what it
get
is.
Into to cleaning them and and filleting them and cooking them on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on WYPR. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
So Cindy, we started out, the beginning of our program was all about just actually buying fish and a little bit of getting people over fish fears. Let's do a little quick layout of what else we want to talk about. Actually filleting fish, dealing with fish when you get it home,
mm-hmm.
and what to expect from different kinds of fish. And then we want to talk about a little bit some basic preparations,
mm-hmm.
two or three things. And then we talked about in the last segment giving each other a little bit of a quiz back and forth,
right?
Essentially tossing one another a live fish.
Yeah.
And you got 30 minutes to deal with it, you know.
How do you cook this? What do you do with this thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Little,
ready,
little
get,
fish
live
quiz.
Scallops, go. You
a little,
know?
Yeah. A little fish quiz show.
Exactly,
yes.
Right.
We both love a competition, so. Here
nah.
We, yes. Okay.
Not once.
Hey, by the way, I want to do a quick thing, which is calories and fat and different fish, because it's interesting. Arctic char, these are all 3.5-ounce servings, okay? So Arctic char has 150 calories and 73 fat calories. Catfish has 135 calories and 68 fat. In contrast, something like flounder has 91 calories on a 3.5-ounce portion, and it has 10.8 calories from fat.
No wonder I like Arctic char so much better than
catfish.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Well, it tells you the fat content of the fish. Grouper is 92 calories and 9.2 calories of fat. Halibut, 110 calories, 20.7 fat. And salmon, 183 calories.
Yes,
we all love salmon. And 98.1 from fat.
That's more like it.
So see, and then tuna, 144 calories. I think it was bluefin tuna specifically. 144 calories for a 3.5-ounce portion and 44 calories of fat. So it tells you the fatty fish, oh my goodness, they are just amazing. But that is something you need to consider when you're cooking.
When you're deciding how to prepare
it,
absolutely.
Is it fatty or is it not fatty?
Yeah, and if you prepare halibut with very little fat or grouper with very little fat, you're going to be an,
yeah. Well, it also affects the way that they cook. It affects
Oh, yeah.
Not only obviously the way it tastes, the way it feels on your palate, or if you're eating it raw, very much how it tastes and how it feels on your palate, but also the way when you are cooking it, how it reacts in a pan or to heat, grill, whatever, how are you going to do it. So I think that's interesting and very important aspect of understanding how to cook fish.
It's super interesting. I think that all of those are probably a lot more healthful counts than the counts we get from, say, duck or pork or
oh, sure. Well,
beef.
Fish is extremely healthy thing for you. So as long as it's, you know,
depending upon
healthy waters and all that good stuff, yeah.
Depending upon the amount of Blanc that's with the fish.
Well, yeah, I am. I am. I do.
Which sounds like it's perfect for grouper.
Blanc is perfect for grouper.
Yeah, because it's very, very lean fish.
Exactly. And that's probably why I serve it with grouper.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Hmm. Imagine that.
Brilliant scent. All right, so let's back up and get into the fish themselves.
Yeah.
So
yep.
We talked about flatfish, like flounder, fluke is another flatfish.
Sole,
types of sole.
Dorade, right?
Dorade and bronzino are not classic flatfish.
Mm. Finfish.
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 And more finfish built for speed, let's say.
Yeah.
Unlike
a
sort of chubbier grouper.
Well, and with a flatfish, you know, you have... You're filleting it completely differently because your backbone is in a different spot from where, or your separation of your fillets is in a different spot from, let's say, a salmon. So if you're filleting a flatfish, you're going in through the center. Okay, you've got the flatfish laying down on your counter, mm-hmm. on your cutting board. And
and some of those things, like a fluke, almost looks like it's square.
Mm-hmm.
Or some kind of weird trapezoid.
Yeah. So you're actually filleting down through the center and coming towards the outside. So your knife cut goes down through the center bone or past the center bone and towards either side. And then you flip it over and you do it again and you get your fillets that way. With a salmon, you're going to bring your knife in just below the head and bring it straight down the fish and down one side, flip it over and do the other side. It's very hard to describe on the radio, but...
Yeah.
You know, that
well,
is
I'm
what
sure
you're doing.
I'm sure there are a million at this point.
Oh, there are
in
a ton
the world,
of videos.
A videos.
Yeah, anything you want to see visually, it's going to be online.
Is there a
fish
best,
wise,
like,
fish cutting wise?
Fish, you know, photographic book that you like the best?
Yeah, I have two books. Well, we just referenced LaRousse.
Because it's nice to have instead of watching a video and trying to do it, I think it's a lot easier to have some kind of a photo guide of this is what you should expect to see, and boom, here's the fish in front of you. This is what you see.
Well, I'll tell you, I think one of the best books on fish and shellfish is James Peterson's Fish and Shellfish Book.
That's a great one.
And, you know, really anything that you can find that would show you drawings or photographs is going to be very helpful. And the one I already referenced is LaRousse Gastronomique. At some point, it's a one-volume book, But at some point, they divided all the chapters up and did it. I think it's 4 or 5 volumes, and one of them. So you can buy LaRousse this way too, and I actually have it with me. It's a small book, which is nice. You can easily move it around, carry it around the kitchen. They have a fish and seafood division of the gastronomique, which is nice because then you just pick up that aspect of the book, and it goes right to what you're looking for. And it has a lot of ideas, many ideas, and they're not all French. Even though the book originates in France.
So Peterson's book is called Fish and Shellfish?
Yes.
And that I recall having a lot of great photographs of, mm-hmm. So you talk about flatfish that you lay out like that. And usually from those fish, if it's you yield probably what, 60%?
Yeah.
There's a lot of body and skeleton, not that much flesh on those fish.
Right. That's one of the reasons why they become so expensive, as well as availability and where they originate. You know, if you're working with true Dover sole, it's a very, very expensive fish. And there are other types of sole, and those can become a little bit less expensive, and that's probably what you want to look for in the market if you can't afford the Dover sole, which is going to be hard to find.
In finfish, the ones that you mentioned, the Dorad, mm-hmm. or Dorado, or you know all mm-hmm. the different names for it, or I guess it's gilt-head sea bream in English proper.
Well, that's another one of the things about fish. Often fish have 10, 12, 15 names, whether it's
all
from
coming
a different
out of the
country.
Same piece of water, but yeah.
Yeah, it can be different country, different languages, but also they're just called different things because they've been around forever.
Well, that's a fish, and they're never gigantic fish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, if it's a 2-pound fish, you're going to get, you know, I guess fillets are probably for what, 3 persons maybe?
Yeah. Dorado?
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. A pound and a half Dorado is usually nice for, you take one off a side, flip it over, take the other off the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's an easy fish to cook by itself.
Or whole.
Clean out the, that's what I mean, is an entire piece. You just clean out the guts and for goodness sake, leave the head on.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit like cooking meat on the bone. It's the same thing. You know, there's gelatin in those fish bones, and the more you cook it, I mean, not the more, it, by cooking it whole, whether the head's on or not, at least if it's still on the bone, if you don't want to leave the head on, you know, it helps to hold the structure of the fish, the body of the fish together, the meat together, obviously, because obviously we all know some fish fillets into very tiny flakes and other into bigger flakes. So you really need the skin on it to hold it together while you're cooking it. And it creates more flavor. That's all there is to it. It creates a moister environment for the fish to cook in, too.
Like anything else, when it has the skin on, it's going to steam from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
The flavor from the bones is going to be there. The fat that's on the skin is going to melt. And
mm-hmm. That's the other beautiful thing about leaving the skin on, is that will help with the fat, and that's super important. It's just going to melt away. But
when we cook a fish like that on our bronzino on the wood grill, the whole fish.
God, I love cooking fish.
It's amazing because the skin, I mean, that, you talk about your red wine with fish matches,
mm-hmm.
the skin, the amount of flavor that gets with the wood fire, and when that gets crispy, it's amazing. It's like its own other course.
Right. Well, I think you know, talking about how to cook fish, the biggest thing is to not overcook it and to cook it in an environment that is best for that particular type of fish. So it comes back to what we were just talking about with how much fat is in the fish. So if it's salmon, salmon grills beautifully. It does not mind the high heat. Salmon sears beautifully because of the fat content. You know, you inevitably are going to get this gorgeous crust on a piece of salmon if you cook it properly at high heat in a pan. Now, when I say high heat for a period of time, because you want to finish it on lower heat. So you simply want to sear. And this is another thing. We always talk about, you know, stainless steel pans or steel pans. Steel pans are perfect for fish.
Steel pans are great, and also just the heavier pan you have, the easier it is to control that fire.
Definitely.
Even just, a steel-lined, heavy copper pan
mm-hmm.
that is generously large for, say, you're cooking 2 nice fillets or something like that. If you have 2 other people for dinner, don't jam 4 fillets in the same pan where you can get 2 great ones.
Right, never overcrowd a pan.
Put another pan on.
It doesn't matter what you're
cooking. Larger pan.
Never overcrowd a pan.
Then you can control the heat properly. I think with salmon, one of the interesting choices is always, you know, to leave skin on one side or not to have skin on.
Yeah.
So you want to make the case one direction or the other?
I have to say I always fillet a salmon. I always take the skin off.
So sometimes I love the skin.
I mean, you can leave it on.
You can.
You absolutely can. But I actually cook salmon without the skin on. I want the flesh to hit that heat directly, and I do want it to get that kind of crispy exterior. And if the skin's on one side, that one side's not going to have that. But you can do it either way. You can absolutely.
For me, the case I make for the fish skin is I like the contrast of the flavor of the skin itself.
And it tastes good.
And the texture of it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a stronger flavor.
Yeah.
No question.
Well, one of the other things you have to do when you're cleaning your fish and getting it prepared, and we haven't really continued talking about filleting, you have to, if you are leaving the skin on, you need to take your knife blade and run it the wrong way up the skin and make sure every single scale is off of there. I still talk to cooks about this every day. You know, your board needs to be clean. I mean, the whole process of dealing with fish is you have to keep your board clean because there's going to be a scale somewhere, and nobody wants to eat a scale, especially in raw fish, but also in cooked fish. You know, if you don't want to catch that piece of skin,
you have
in your
to work in
a
pretty pristine way.
Yeah,
if you want to get a good result,
you're going to go through a bunch of kitchen towels when you're working with filleting fish.
If you're doing the fish at home once a week or twice a week, it's not a big deal. It's worth the
fuss.
I'm
not trying to be negative, but there are things that you need to think about when you're working with it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly true. But with something or like a dorade, say you're doing a fillet. If the pan is hot and you have a small amount of oil in the pan, maybe a tiny bit less than you would normally use for a fillet, if you have the pan a little higher than you're going to cook the fish, and you go in with the skin, you have to score that skin or the fish is going to fold up on you.
It'll buckle on you. Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you have to hold it down a little bit anyway.
Well, that's what a fish spatula. I mean, that's another thing to think about. You should, you know, if I were going to cook a lot of fish, I would have a fish spatula, which is an unusually shaped metal spatula, and a bunch of different producers make them, and they have slits in the spatula so that the fat can, you know, go through. But it's the perfect shape for a fillet of fish or
and it's kind of a little bit wandy. It's a little bit you get very good control of the
spatulas. I actually do a lot of things with fish spat. I mean, I'll even pull veg and things out of a shocking pot and with that. I mean, you can do a lot with that, but that's what they're for.
You're a maniac.
I am a maniac. And when you're talking about searing that fish, you can use that fish spat will cover most of the area of the fish, depending on how big it is. But I mean, basically it will a portion, and that you can hold that fish down with that skin down in the pan so that it does not buckle. And that's what you have to do. There's no way around it.
You have to do it. And the benefit to me is always what I love to do with a fish like that is hold it down, melt that fat out of that skin. So then when you go to turn that fish, it's going to cook in its own fat a little bit.
Absolutely.
And then this is, and you'll love this, the thing that I love to do that will make you happy is that when I drain the fat that's in the pan once I turn that and put a little bit of fresh butter in the pan.
There you go.
And that butter that's melting and browning and the fish fat that's in the pan baste the fillets to finish.
There you go. And that you see that a lot on probably cooking shows, I would imagine. You see a cook taking a spoon and just constantly back over the fish, back over the fish, back over the fish with that fat from the pan, and that's why they're doing it.
Well, it's also all, you know, the seasoning of the fish itself.
Sure. And now, browning.
Do you season the fish skin or just the flesh?
I season only the flesh and then the skin when it comes out of the pan.
Like when it's crispy and done, just a little finishing.
Away from the plate. That's another thing. Always, anytime you're seasoning something, make sure you're doing it on the cutting board or away from your plate. You don't want that extra salt to fall onto your plate.
The throwing salt at the...
Oh, God, please. Yeah.
Isn't that the thing that makes you crazy when you see someone throwing salt at a pan?
I'm like, what are you doing? Don't throw that on there.
Actually, go put the salt where it belongs.
Yeah, put it where it belongs. Exactly. one of the other things, talking about fat, you know, if you're going to sear, you want a high heat fat, a fat that has a high flash point, which means at what point does it burn or burst into flame?
So like canola oil?
Yeah, canola oil, peanut oil, corn oil. Those
grapeseed
are all
oil.
High. Yeah, grapeseed oil. They all have a high flash point. So those are, well, I don't know how high flash point grapeseed oil has, but you can still cook in it. It's good.
So that's not butter. That's not.
No, you'd have to work.
Extra virgin olive oil.
No, and extra virgin olive oil is annihilated by the heat process. So you're wasting your extra virgin if you're trying to cook in it.
You lose all the flavor of the fruit.
You can cook in a pure olive oil. And I would highly suggest doing that, actually, depending on the fish. If you're trying to do an Italian or a Greek fish preparation, using olive oil is really a great way to go. And just recognize that oil, even if it's just a regular, you know, whatever pressing of the grapes, obviously not the first pressing, which is what extra virgin is, that it will have very good flavor and it will impart flavor, whereas corn oil or canola or something like that is much more neutral.
Real quick to finish this segment, steaky fish, like tuna, swordfish.
Please cook it medium rare, first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
And I would grill it, quite frankly. I mean, those are great grilling fish. So if you have the ability to grill it.
But you're talking about a nice fillet from the loin.
Yeah, nice fillet from the loin. Grill it. You can certainly saute it. I can't even see baking it in the oven. That just horrifies me. I can't. Yeah, I mean, you could do it, But I mean, those are fish that are just going there because they have a high fat content. They are a good high fat. It's a good thing. You know, they're just going to sear so well. So, you know, put it on a grill.
A couple of times in Sicily, again, I've had tuna, bluefin tuna that was lightly poached in a mixture of extra virgin olive oil with a lot of citrus peel and chilies. And
that sounds good.
Was amazing.
So but poached.
Poached. And then, like, rested to room temperature.
Yeah.
And then just sliced thin like a tagliata.
Was it cooked all the way through?
And dressed, no.
Okay, so it was, no, so, but, it
but,
was
but,
rare
but maybe,
rare.
But maybe it's a medium or so.
Oh, medium, okay.
Maybe it's a medium or so. But the texture, because it was poached at relatively, you know, it was not a high heat thing. Mm-hmm. It was just really just like the simmering oil.
Hmm. Oh my gosh.
It was really remarkable. And the flavor from the olives and the peel of, and it was like pomelos and a bunch of different citrus that were in there that had a little bitterness. And that oil flavored that too. And before it was sliced, it was rested for probably 2-3 minutes. And then just a little bit of good salt and a little lemon juice, and was marvelous.
It made me think, where were we when we had we were at the winemaker's house and we were sitting outside?
2-year-old preserved bonito.
Oh my gosh.
For breakfast with the red onions?
Yeah, for breakfast. Yeah. That was one of the best things I've ever eaten in my life. And of course, we were in one of the most beautiful places ever. Yeah. Where were we?
Agataria in Basque Country in Spain.
Oh my gosh.
At Chocolina.
I think that's the only time I've had fish that was cooked all the way through.
It's the only time I've seen you have 2 glasses of wine at breakfast.
That was light.
It was fresh, crispy. Excellent breakfast wine.
Yeah.
So when we come back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we're going to get into a little bit of a chef's challenge with a fish off.
Yes.
Fish on quiz. WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
When we're on breaks, I'm always doing silly voices about things because I wanted to, but I'm excited about this segment.
I am too.
This is the first annual Foreman & Wolf Fish Off.
Fish Off, yes. It's fishy. It's going to be very fishy.
I bet it will be. Mm-hmm. I bet it will be. Mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm. I've decided.
Will you be deflating footballs or anything? Are you going to cheat?
No, I've decided that every other one of mine is going to be hard easy. So just get ready. Okay, Foreman, let's go. Let's do it.
Okay.
First one is eel. We're starting now.
Eel?
Yeah.
Do I get to kill it?
Yes, well, but we already talked about it, so we don't have to go back over the horror show.
Because I'm
killing
happy
the eel.
To go over
no, don't
and
go
peeling
over.
The skin yeah. from the.
All right, well, you can start at peeling the skin.
No, well, the question with eel is always when you cook it, do you want to cook it on the spine? Are you going to try to take it off the spine?
Mm-hmm.
I'd always rather have it on the spine. My favorite way I've ever had it is what I always would want to replicate.
I wonder if you're going to say what I'm thinking. Go ahead.
This is you were not at the table for this.
Of course.
Sorry. but what I would totally replicate, and did try to do one time, and I think we did a decent job years ago. It's cooking eel on a wood fire.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And you marinate it for probably 45 minutes or an hour ahead of time with a lot of bay and plenty of sea salt and a little bit of vinegar, like red wine vinegar.
Okay, all right.
You rub it down really good, almost like with a slurry of that. And then before you cook it, you remove it, but you leave that rub down for a while so it soaks in well.
Sure.
And you do the procedure as you described in your violent reading of the LaRousse eel treatement beforehand.
Violent reading. So this is skin off.
This is skin off. This is on the bone, relatively hot grill.
Yeah, of course.
A hot wood grill if you can do it.
Yep.
And it's the whole fish, you know, it's the whole eel.
Okay.
And you roll it and you kind of have to turn, it's almost like 6 little turns to get it to the whole thing to mark.
You want it to cook evenly.
Properly.
Yeah.
And you need a hotter side and a cooler side of the grill because you want to start it on the hotter side and get that caramelization, which is awesome. And also, but get that spine, get the bone steaming on the inside early, mm-hmm. and then slow cook it a little bit. Like once you turned it on and marked all the sides, it's a round fish.
Right.
Once you've marked everything, then get it on the cooler area. And the sauce you've made ahead of time, this is a summertime thing, you need really pretty San Marzanos or some kind of beautifully fruity tomato. Mm-hmm. A lot of lemon peel from Exceptional Lemons. Like if you had access to those beautiful lemons that they have in Campania or, you know,
yeah,
the,
those are amazing.
Or Murcia or something, you need really beautiful lemons because you need the peel and the juice. And you need very good olive oil and a lot of whatever fresh herb of your choice. For me, it's always mint and basil together for this.
Mm-hmm.
And you need no big
nice
surprise.
And fresh,
yeah, you need no big surprise. Maybe one Calabrian chili.
Yeah,
steeped in that sauce.
That's your secret ingredient.
And you literally will just cut once the eel is off the grill, and you cook it medium well, so it'll come off the bone. But
you want it to be tender,
right?
And you can, I can imagine medium rare eel is not working.
No, it's.
Which rarely do we say about
it's,
fish.
It's almost kind of like pork in that you have to kind of like you get. There's a sweet spot that's a little. It's not done, but it's close.
Right, got
it. And it rests till it's almost done, but it's still moist inside. And then you cut segments, and it's almost like a submarine sandwich or something. You cut a segment of the fish, and then put that on the diner's plate, and you give them the sauce. And you literally, if that's cooled enough, it gets down to where you can touch it. You can peel the meat right off the bone, mm-hmm. and you dunk the meat from the eel into the cold sauce. Or you set up a bruschetta, like you grill toast as well.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun.
And then you lay the hot eel and the cool sauce on there. It makes a heck of a snack.
Well, you know, eel is one of the traditional ingredients in bouillabaisse. So, you know, I think that's another way of thinking. I mean, a lot of people have good reference on what bouillabaisse is, and it is a fish stew traditionally made by fishermen, right, for many hundreds of years. So, you know, you think of eel as being a pretty essential ingredient in that dish. And also, we were somewhere in France.
It has good flavor. It's like a base note for fish.
Yeah. We were in France and had eel poached in red wine. And that was remarkable. That was really, really beautiful, that dish. So, and that was on the bone. And you just, you know, the meat just gently came off of the bone while you're eating it. It was really, really good. But seeing it poached in red wine was not the most beautiful thing in the world, but the flavors were fantastic. So that's all that matters.
It's a big, gutsy, flavorful fish.
Yeah. All right. One more. So after eel, you get skate.
Skate.
Mm-hmm.
Skate. Of all the fish in the world, I will admit that it is not my all-time favorite.
Okay, well then skip it.
No.
Well, I mean, if you don't like it,
The thing is that everyone...
It can be difficult
it's not
to
my,
deal
it's
with.
It's not my
That's
very favorite because I think everyone's preparation of skate wing ends up being really similar, which is always, you know, seared hard in a pan.
Yeah.
And then, brown butter or mm-hmm. something like that.
And that's a good preparation. And there's nothing wrong with that prep.
I've always wanted to have cornmeal fried skate.
Well, that's one of the recipes I was just looking at. Not cornmeal fried, but fried. I think that's a great way to deal with it.
Literally, you know, like almost like you would cut fish sticks.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for that kind of thing. It's some kind of ridiculous remoulade sauce or something.
Yeah, I think that's a good.
I don't
way
know
to deal
why I
it.
Want to like deal with skate, but I want to deal with it like you would in New Orleans. You know, where you like remoulade sauce and you cornmeal it up and.
I have to say, I love fried fish. So, and whether it's in a cornmeal batter or just flour. You know, straight breading procedure or, you know, marinated in buttermilk like we do with in the cornmeal breading procedure or
cold,
beignets.
Good cold beer for that with lunch, very happy about.
I love a light beignet, not, you know,
you
you're talking about New Orleans.
You can skip past that beer comment, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, that's fine. Beer's good. You know, it's, I think in the traditional beignet batter, if you have been to New Orleans, is very doughy. And when I say a beignet batter for fish, I mean something that's very light, that has a lot of baking powder, baking soda in it, and you know, really is light, almost like a tempura batter instead of going towards the doughy aspect of being a... All right, so your next fish is red snapper.
Red snapper.
Do you
red
like the way I said
pretty,
that?
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. You said it in a very snappy fashion.
No, red snapper is a beautiful fish.
No shocker there. It's
and not so hard to get around.
No,
this coast.
And snappers are nice
and
to
southern fish.
Is nice and easy to take a fillet from too.
Mm-hmm.
And is a nice fish to cook in a pan. But that's funny. That's one I would do without the skin in the pan.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually cook it in clarified butter in the pan.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty lean fish, Nick, and it likes that. Sort of a treatment, and I think I'd be pretty old-fashioned about it and do a and do a cream sauce. A cream sauce or hollandaise of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe hollandaise with capers or hollandaise with a little bit of tomato product or something in it, like saucheron.
Sounds good. One of the things about working with red snapper is it really buckles up when you cook it. So if you are going to leave the skin on, you're going to have to sear it, score it, or you're going to have to absolutely hold it down when you're searing it, because it is a big buckler. Mm-hmm. It will go into a big U shape if you're not careful cooking it with the skin on.
I've ruined some red snapper in a serious way.
Red snapper's not, it's a great fish, though. Sweet, mild.
Being taught by a man named Tom Turner at the Franklin Inn Club in Philly. It's like, go to the market, and this guy Bob says he's got fresh red snappers, and bring them. We're going to put them on the tasting menu for lunch, and brought them. They were nice fish, cut like nice fillets from them. Laid them out. You know, he told me what size he'd wanted things for the menu, and we got the first order, and it literally looked like boomerangs or something that I.
Oh, that's the problem. They really, literally, they will
standing
buckle up
in the pan.
Into a U shape if you're not careful. That's, you got to watch red snapper.
It's like, yeah, I got. Thank you, Tom, for my red snapper lesson.
There you go.
And not hitting me in the head.
I will say with snapper, I really like to gently cook it. I prefer to remove the skin, and I'd love to just poach it in the pan with butter, shallot, finely chopped shallot, a little bit of white wine, a little bit of salt, maybe a little bay leaf in there. A little bit of fresh thyme, or a very aromatic herb. But I really
so
like
you're
to poach it.
So not going for any real color,
no,
just a pan
no
poach.
Color, zero. Just gently cooked. It's called shallow poaching. Shallow poach in the kitchen is halfway, about halfway up the side of the fish. Real poaching is immersed in liquid. So shallow poach is perfect for something like a piece of snapper that's you're making. Maybe you have a 6 ounce fillet.
What do you do with the sauce wise?
Oh, and then that's the beautiful thing, is that you have just created a pan sauce, so you just simply reduce that down. Pull your fillets out a little bit before they're done, pop them in the oven just to keep them warm in a baking dish, and I'm talking about a minute or two, and you're going to reduce that pan sauce and finish. This is where fresh chervil comes in beautifully at the last moment. You could add capers to the pan. You could finish with a little bit more lemon. You could add cold butter to the pan to thicken the sauce. Once you bring that sauce down to where it's just barely covering the bottom of the pan, it's ready for a little cold butter. It's called monter au beurre in French, and it means to lift, literally to lift with butter. And that's what cold butter, like just little squares of cold butter added
at the
last
moment. That's like the title of your theme song.
Oh. Yeah, so that's a good deal, a good way to deal with red snapper. All right, how about shad? Here's another. I told you that some were going to be nice, some were going to be not nice. But this is an area that likes shad, so that's why.
Is this shad ill-tempered?
No, shad is just difficult. Shad has a whole bunch of bones. Shad is an oddly,
If you want to make Chesapeake bouillabaisse, really good bouillabaisse or fish stew, that's exactly what you want.
Right.
I mean, that's... To me, I would love to make a real fisherman soup with clams out of the bay, shad out of the bay.
Mm-hmm.
That to me sounds like a good time.
Yeah. Okay.
Green tomato, peppers.
Yeah.
Potatoes.
Yep.
Celery.
And that's the fish, not the roe.
Look at me doing all the casual fish dishes.
Yeah, look at you. Yeah. And then how about here's a nice one, our local rockfish. What would you do to rockfish?
What's the size of the rockfish? I think that's the biggest question,
right? Well,
that's
up to you. It could be a whole fish. It can be a fillet. Well,
it's probably up to the fisherman, I think.
Portion.
Maybe the rockfish is mom and dad.
All right. So you're buying it.
I'm buying it.
Let's say it's a whole fish. Let's deal with it as a whole fish.
If it's a whole fish and it's pretty decent size, let's say you can cut four nice fillets from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is that? Three and a half pounds, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good size fish. The with the skin. Searing in the pan. I think doing something. I want something for red wine. Honestly, that's immediately my driver is not just which fish is beautiful, but also, how do I feel about what's going outside? What do I want on the rest of the menu?
And of course.
And maybe it's cold. Maybe it's soup first, and maybe it's the rockfish second.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's for a light and pretty red wine or something, so the rock. I think some kind of a mushroom broth. Maybe if there were porcinis in season, but they're not. Maybe trumpets, maybe and literally make almost like a nage with a chicken jus and finish with a little bit of butter and the trumpets that you roasted for a long, long time first, and some sweet shallots, and you have that nage, and you have the fish you seared in the pan, and maybe make a little bit of lemon salt with the peel from the.
Mm-hmm.
the lemon and dust that on the top of the crispy skin on the rockfish and place that on the sort of almost sauce but brothy mushroom business underneath that fish, and then do some kind of a starch or something as like a heartier side dish, mm-hmm. some kind of a cauliflower gratin or something like that.
Sounds good. So, yeah, I make a sauce from dried porcinis in the wintertime when we can't get them fresh, and you have to be careful with porcini mushrooms because they do grow in sandy soil in the woods, and there's all kinds of things in there with them. So when you do go to, if you want to make a powder from them, you could. They're already dry. All you have to do is pop them in the blender and just really, really, really blend them. And then I would still pass it through a sieve just to make sure that you don't have any large pieces left or
any twigs
or anything funny. But
pieces of a hedgehog or something.
I also make a sauce from dried porcinis where I saute onions and shallots in butter and then add the porcini mushrooms. And I usually add Madeira to the pot as well as cream and a little bit of light chicken stock. And it's not something that has to cook a very long time. It can cook about 20 minutes to really get good flavor from those dried porcinis, and then strain it, and that could be a very pretty sauce for fish. I also do that with beef, but if the lighter it is, you could add a little white wine, or if as in your dish you're going to have a red wine with it, you might want to add a little bit of red wine to that sauce when you're making it instead of the Madeira.
Yeah, it sounds like you're thinking something robust as well as it. Right, the thing about rockfish is it's a white fish, but it has a pretty robust flavor.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really unlike those Mediterranean fish, Branzino or Dorade to work with. And so it's nice to have, you can be very seasonal with your garnishes and you don't have to be shy with your garnishes.
Yeah, rockfish is amazing. Okay.
And so.
It's my turn.
One on my list, mm-hmm. sardines.
Oh, good, because I love sardines.
You know I can't eat anchovies, but I love sardines.
Yeah,
it's hard to get nice sardines.
Okay.
So quick, 30 seconds on sardines.
Oh, well, you slit the skins, gut them, pull their gills out. And just
so sexy.
Yeah. And then grill them, and hopefully over a wood grill. But if you don't have a wood grill, that's okay. And oh my gosh, sardines have so much wonderful oily flavor. I love them with fresh basil on the, this is a summertime dish, fresh basil on the plate, fresh tomato, maybe tomato carpaccio, thinly sliced tomato laid out all over the plate with a really good, beautiful, bright extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of fleur de sel, a little bit of freshly cracked black pepper, the basil we talked about. You could scatter tiny capers on that plate, and of course Niçoise olives, either whole with the pits removed,
tapenade is what you want.
You want
chickpea
tapenade
salad with peppers and lemon,
mm-hmm. roasted garlic. I love sardines. They're full of flavor though, so you have to really.
We are so out of time.
Okay.
And I'm so hungry to eat fish.
That was fun.
Thanks so much for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman
and Chef Cindy Wolf.